liars are not going to want to live next to a sorority. We need somebody who can relate to stupid young people.
Hey, neighbors. Let's shut this shit down.
Hello. Welcome to Popcorn and Prosecco, a movie review podcast where we talk about movies, movies, movies. Perry's not here this week, so I'm with my co-host, Angie Han.
Hello.
And we're going to be reviewing The Nice Guys, and there's two Sorority Rising. Angie, give us the rundown on Nice Guys.
All right. A mismatched pair of private eyes investigate the apparent suicide of a fading porn star in 1970s Los Angeles. Yeah, that sounds about right. It's directed by Shane Black, and it stars the mismatched pair of private eyes are played by Ryan Gosling, whose character is named, is it Holland March or Holland Marsh? And Russell Crowe's... Right, and Russell Crowe's character is named Jackson Healy, and I just had to throw that out there because those are great movie names. So I really, really love this movie. I feel like Shane Black is someone that I like him as much as anyone else likes him, I guess, but he's not one of those directors that I'm like, oh my God, it's a new Shane Black movie. I was looking forward to this one, but I didn't.
Well, he hasn't directed that much yet either.
No, but I feel like he has a lot of very hardcore fans, and like as much as I like him, I don't consider myself among his most like devoted fans or anything. But I came out of this movie loving it, and I think that like when I walked out of it, I realized that the reason I loved it so much is that he just does such a great. It's all the usual Shane Black stuff, but I felt like the overall feeling it left me with was that it's a really good blend of like cynicism and sincerity, and like it's like really like uplifting and like happy and joyful, but it's also like there's a really an undercurrent of like actual sorrow to it, and he just kind of mixes them all in this blender, and the pacing is really good. Like it's one of those like Shaggy Dog stories where like the plot keeps twisting and turning and sprawling out in weird ways, but I think he keeps it rolling pretty quickly. So I laughed my ass off. I had a great time. I really adore this movie. And Ryan Gosling and Russell Crowe are so good. The thing about Ryan Gosling, I feel like, is that I know he loves doing those, like, sad, serious, somber dramas where he gets to play, like, the strong, silent type and stuff like Drive and, like, Place Beyond the Pines. But as far as I can tell, he's actually way better at, like, playing the guy who gets to be, like, charismatic and funny and kind of goofy and talk too much. I think Crazy Stupid Love is actually one of my favorite performances of his, even though it's not, like, it's not one of those movies that I feel like people, like, revere as, like, a great movie. But he is fantastic in it, and he's more in that mode here, so I really enjoyed seeing him play to that.
Yeah, I think it's that people undervalue comedy and don't see it as fine an art as dramatic acting. And correct. I think Gosling's a great dramatic actor. I mean, he destroys me in Blue Valentine, for instance, and in Half Nelson, he's so good. But in this, watch Ryan Gosling scream like a little girl. Like, he does these trill howls of pain and cowardice that really, like, give me an idea of the character. And it's like he does stuff that's like borderline like Laurel and Hardy's Three Stooges stuff, where he's literally like swatting his face in one scene because he can't believe something that's happened. And like it's really astonishing, because it's just like I don't know that we've ever seen him in a comedy role quite like this before. And he plays such a kind of despicable character, but because Shane Black like made his career making Lethal Weapon, like, or writing it rather, like putting a charismatic actor in these roles makes them a lot more easy to digest. And it's great because you get to kind of understand that the characters are not good people, but still really enjoy them, because Russell Crowe and Ryan Gosling are crazy charismatic. And Russell Crowe in this is like bloated and like kind of over it. And I don't mean like as an actor, but like his character is so kind of frustrated with the world that it is my favorite of Russell Crowe's. I like him when he just gets beleaguered and annoyed at everyone.
Even better than Winter's Tale, Christy. Even better than
But
Winter's
it's the
Tale.
Same thing. That, like, well, it's in this, he doesn't get to do anything as cool as ripping off a waiter's face to draw a blood picture.
Oh, if only. That is what The Nice Guys was missing.
Right? It's like, there's some fun moments in this. He gets to enact some pretty crazy violence. But, like, I like Russell Crowe in, like, it's so, he seems so chill in this, which is, again, not something I think of when I think of Russell Crowe.
No.
It's really a strange chemistry. And then one thing that was, for me, really fun is that it's not just the nice guys, these two guys that they're selling in the trailer so much as this unlikely, shaggy team of detectives, but also Ryan Gosling's daughter in the movie whose name I won't even attempt to pronounce. She's lovely. Miss Rice will go by because I can't say her first name. But her name's Holly in the movie, and Holly is like his teenage daughter who is just frustrated to death with him. And she's very Nancy Drew. Like, she's really smart and sharp, and like, she gets things. And so whenever her dad is kind of screwing something up, she's kind of in the mix too and making sure things move along. And she's also the conscience of the movie, where these two guys are very bitter and they get very frustrated with the way the world is. But Holly forces them to like have hope and to try again. And it sounds kind of trite, but within the context of a movie where shit happens, like, of course it's set in the 1970s, so you have to have a scene set at like a porn producer's house where there are topless mermaids swimming in a tank, because whatevs. And like, you know, there's like a lot of just crazy, oh, like Hannibal Buress plays a giant killer bee in this.
Oh yeah, okay,
that's not a spoiler, it's in the trailer.
It is, all right, I hadn't
it's
seen
in the first trailer.
All right, sorry.
Yeah. It's okay. And he was like, hang on a second. Wait. There's a lot of things to this that I think are really funny and sharp. And like, what's great about Shane Black is he defined the buddy cop genre with movies like Lethal Weapon and Last Boy Scout. And then he came back and started directing Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. And then he did Iron Man 3. But he's really great at this buddy cop dynamic. But what I like so much about it is
mismatch pairs. Yeah.
I like the way he twists expectations. Like, I'm rather than giving away the example in this, in Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, there's the typical scene where someone's like, I'm not going to give you any information, and they threaten the guy with the gun. And in most of those movies, they like click and the chamber's empty. The guy's like, oh my God, okay, I'll tell you whatever you want to know. But in Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, right, and shoots this stranger in the head, and they don't get any information. And the guy's like, what do you mean? You just shot that guy in the head. And they argue about math. And like, there's a similar approach here where stuff that usually works in detective movies has a real life fallibility that makes it really funny.
But I feel like, as much it's true that these characters are not good people, but I feel like another thing that the movie does really well, and it is aided by the fact that the actors are so charismatic and are so great together, but it like, going back to what I was saying before about how there is this like undercurrent of sorrow to it, like, you get the sense that in their own way they are just trying to get through this world. Like, they're not good people, but you still understand where they're coming from. And I feel like even the daughter,
they're trying to be less bad.
Yeah, they're trying to be less bad. Like, they're just people that are, they're just trying to live their fucked up lives the best way they know how. And I think that they even do that with the daughter, where, she is the conscience of the movie and all that. But, like, you see, like, the ways that as a child she is kind of screwed up and her life is kind of screwed up. And, you know, you feel for them. And it makes it very, very easy to root for them, even though they are not particularly, like, heroic or good people.
But I do have one qualm with this movie, and it's just that I feel like it uses its 1970s aesthetic as a cheap excuse to tell certain jokes that just feel honestly very dated. There's a couple of instances where they throw around words like whore and slut, and in one instance the word faggots. And it's not that I'm saying we can't use those words or something, because I'm not a PC, SWJ, police, blah, 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 stealing your words away. But it's more that the way they're used in the film, sharp enough jokes, and it just to me cuts in, because now we are a modern audience where those words do give us pause. So if you're going to use them, you need to be really mindful about the joke you're telling. And these just feel like old school jokes stuck in a modern movie, even though it's set in the 70s. And so, like, for me, those were distractions, and they honestly felt like lower quality jokes that could have been cut.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, like, I've seen some people defend humor. And, okay, I want to clarify that this is not a huge part of the movie, and it did not...
No, it's literally three jokes.
My gushing review right up until now, it did not, like, you know, make me not love this movie or anything like that. But it is kind of, like, they are kind of moments that take you out of the movie. And I've seen some people make the argument, like, oh, well, that's just what the 70s were like. Like, oh, that's what, you know, what do you expect from, like, the noir genre or something like that? But it is a movie being made in the year 2016 for audiences 2016. As you pointed out, those words feel different and have a different power than they did back then. And they took me out of the movie for a moment. Not in, like, the worst way possible, but in a way where I was like, oh, right, okay. So I didn't love that. Especially with regard to women, I was actually kind of pleasantly surprised that it is better than a lot of movies of this type at the way it treats women. Like, there's one character that they are kind of chasing around for a lot of the movie, and you have a very specific image of, like, what she's like. Like, she looks like a fairy tale princess or something, and you have this, like, idea that she's gonna be, like, a damsel in distress and damage and, like, whatnot, and then you meet her, and she's just not what you thought she was at all, and she has her own motivations and agenda, and it is not what you were expecting, and I thought that was great.
I did like her a lot. I was thrown off because the movie starts by basically acting out like a pulp cover in a way that's very graphically violent and also involves a lot of nudity. And that kind of threw me, and I get what they were doing, but again, it was the kind of thing where I was like, what are we doing? Like, is this going to be like a time travel trip in a bad way? But overall, I really like the movie. It's just that there are moments where I feel like Shane Black's dedication to being quote unquote shocking in these moments doesn't always serve the comedy best.
Which is a great transition for the next review that we're going to do. So in some Nice Guys, I think we're both thumbs upping Nice Guys, right? Yeah?
Yes, absolutely. Nice Guys is really fun.
Yes. But speaking of, you know, the way that movies treat women and treat things like this, take it away into Neighbors.
Neighbors, yeah. 2. Sorority Rising. After a sorority moves in next door, which is even more debaucherous than the fraternity before it, Mac and Kelly have to ask for help from their former enemy, Teddy. Now,
that happens.
This
like,
one,
that is not a that's, great.
That's a kind of deceptive spell story, but we'll get into that. But like, so this one brings back Rose Byrne and Seth Rogen as the adorable couple who live next to this massive house. And now the fraternity that Zac Efron was in is gone. A sorority moves in. And what's actually cool about it is it's not just like, let's do all the same stuff again, but this time girls. Like, doing all the same stuff again with girls is actually inherently different because of the way, like, actual Greek life, as in, like, sororities, fraternities, and our current culture treats girls differently. And the film actually makes a great deal of comedy out of the double standard, where, like, there's one point where Seth Rogen's friend is talking about how he's so glad he's having a baby boy with his wife because he doesn't want to have to raise girls. Girls are hard. Girls are complicated. And Seth Rogen's like, no, raising girls is awesome. And he's like, no way, man. Because like, when my son gets laid for the first time, we're going to get a beer. But when your daughter gets laid for the first time, it's a problem. And like, there's a lot of jokes like that throughout the movie. It do make you think, but not in like a preachy way. It actually, what was so rewarding and refreshing to me is I've seen sororities a lot in movies, but typically it's like a bunch of bitchy girls that just want to tear each other apart, or it's just an excuse to have women like running around in their underwear so a slasher can come in. So to actually have characters in this who are young women who like want to form a sisterhood and want to understand who they are as people, bringing in Chloe Grace Moretz and Kiersey Clemons and a new girl named Beanie Feldstein, which I think she's actually like Jonah Hill's cousin or something. I think I saw that on the Today Show. I was like, oh, half paying attention. Yeah. I mean, she kind of looks like him, so that makes sense. But like, that's also what's cool about this movie, where like in the first movie, the frat, like they're just young doofuses. And so you don't necessarily hate them, but they are being kind of mean. These girls have like a good reason that they're fighting for this house. Like Greek life and the college life won't let them have a sorority the way they want. And so they are tired of listening to the rules of these men folk that like objectify them at frat parties and barge into their dorm rooms and tell them what they can and can't do. And they want to create their own rules. And obviously I'm a fan of that idea, but what's cool is so are the main characters, like so are Mac and Kelly, but it's like, so like in theory they want to support these girls, but also they're like, we're trying to sell our house and you guys are making our lives hell. So it's actually a really fun story because it's not just like these are bad guys, these are good guys, but also because of the way all these characters push and pull. I had so much fun. It's so much more complex than it seems from the trailers, and I was thrilled to learn that.
I felt like the first, I mean, you kind of make it sound like in the first one, the guys have, like, no reason for doing what they're doing, and I disagree with that. I felt like within the world of the movie, it made sense, but one of the other differences that doesn't, like, other than the very obvious gender difference between, like, you know, last time it was against a fraternity, this time it's against a sorority, one thing I noticed is that last time the fraternities, like, their whole deal was that they're all, like, the main characters from the fraternity are people that are about to graduate and kind of, like, scared of moving into adulthood. Whereas this one is more about, like, it's only, they're only, what, like, 4 years younger, but in college that makes a huge difference. The main sorority characters in this one are girls that have kind of left home for the first time, just left high school, and are kind of trying to figure out, like, what they want the rest of their lives to be like, what they want their college experience to be like. So that, I felt like that was actually, you know, other than being a very obvious gender difference, to me that accounted for a lot of the ways that this movie feels different. And I love that. Like, I love that, because I feel like there's so often when you see a comedy sequel that just feels like it's trying to like rehash the original, like Hangover 2, literally just a remake of The Hangover, Zoolander 2, like just a long checklist of references. This one seemed like it actually was trying to do something new and tell a different story, and at the same time kind of move the characters that we remembered from the last story along in ways that make sense for them. Like, they do continue.
Yeah, like, as you point out, like, as you point out, the first movie had these frat guys kind of at the end of college figuring out what their next step was. And so picking up with Teddy, where all of his friends are kind of moving on, they're getting engaged, they've got good jobs or whatever, and Teddy is not.
it works really well because it's so true to like what we knew of the character and the direction that it was headed in. It's not one of those like movies where they're like, well, fast forward 2 years and everything's different and everyone's fine and everything's fixed. And part of one of the subplots in this movie is him trying to, like, as someone who's, like, I guess he's having a little bit of a quarter-life crisis, like, someone who's trying to figure out, like, now that my college years are behind me, like, what am I going to do in this big, wide world? And actually, going back to Teddy, so one of the things that was really surprising, because I don't think they've shown this in the trailers, is you learn something interesting about Dave Franco's character.
It happens, like, the first 5 minutes.
Okay, all right. So basically, one of the, like, you know, aside from this movie being very feminist and, like, very much for, like, women kind of taking ownership of their own lives, this movie, I was very surprised to find, is very gay-friendly because you learn very early on that they kind of retcon Dave Franco's character as having been gay, and he gets proposed to by his boyfriend, like, at a guy's poker night full of frat boys. And it's just like, I'm like, that's like
where they all sing together to propose, like, for him.
Like, that's not a scene that I like. It's kind of like how you said, like, we use these sororities in movies all the time, and they're always just like stereotypes, just like bitchy girls that are trying to tear each other down or band together to do evil. And this is kind of like the guy version of that, where you see fraternities in movies all the time, and they're always just like these bastions of like toxic masculinity with like guys like picking on each other and being like horrible and crude and like basically competing to see who could be worse. But then it's a moment where, like, I feel like these movies have done such a good job of showing what real people get out of them, which is like that sense of, like, you know, brotherhood or sisterhood of, like, these are people that you're really, really close to and feel connected to.
I totally agree, but I want to move into the style of comedy because we kind of set this up at the start and then didn't get into it.
Oh, sorry.
There are a lot of jokes in this that are, like, screaming with laughter, like, wild, and, like, if they had been done differently, would be offensive. But they're not. They're just irreverent. And I think a big part of the reason why the jokes in this movie work, because they make fun of lots of stuff. There's jokes about, like, Bill Cosby and race relations and police brutality and sexism and men's rights activists and rape culture. And there's a lot of stuff in here. But the reason the comedy, I think, works so well is because the writing team that put this together is very aware of how a joke shifts depending on who tells it. So, for instance,
and who they tell it to.
For instance, there's a moment where Dave Franco makes the joke about, like, how, you know, of course gay guys are crazy about Teddy because they want to fuck the shit out of him is the line. And I feel like that's not a big T, whatever, anyway. And, like, the point is, though, that he says in response, well, you said it. And that's kind of a very key moment. It's like, it's fine for Dave Franco to make the joke because he's not punching down. He's as the gay character in the movie, is, like, playing with the stereotype in a fun way. And that's what's really cool about it. Like, they have cop jokes in the movie, but they have Hannibal Buress, and I'm going to forget the other guy's name.
Jared Carmichael. He has the Carmichael show.
Right. They're the cops, so it, like, changes the trope enough that you can make these jokes in a way that's actually really funny and refreshing and not just like, ooh, what are we doing? And in that way, it reminds me of War on Everyone, to throw back to something we talked about ages ago, but which did get a release, so we'll talk about it in full more later. But because the movie actually has a representation of different, you know, people from, like, men, women, and people of color and all this stuff, they can tell these jokes in a way that makes it seem like everybody's in on the joke as opposed to make fun of the marginalized. So
yeah,
it works
out in contrast from something like Nice Guys, which we were just talking about, where it's two, like, straight white men making jokes about, like, women and gay guys and stuff like that.
Exactly. It's like, it's really mindful of that, and in a way that doesn't feel calculating, but then it actually feels like it's thoughtfully trying to look at the landscape of comedy as we have now, where people are saying, hey, I'm not okay with these kind of jokes anymore. And so you're trying to figure out, how can you still tell jokes that will shock your audience, but not in a way that it makes them go home pissed off?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like, you know, a lot of people have talked about how surprisingly progressive this movie is, and it's great, but one thing I want to emphasize is that it's not a movie that is funny in spite of being progressive and being feminist and being gay friendly. It is a movie that kind of like just adopts that as its worldview and then mines that for humor. Like, you know, like the jokes that you pointed out are good examples. And I love that. Like, I feel like I don't want to like make it sound like, oh, this is like a preachy movie that's all about like,
it's absolutely not.
Stuff. Like, but yeah, like one of the jokes that I found really funny, for example, was, there's a joke about like bloody tampons that like I just like was cracking up because it's definitely an example of just, you know, this is a joke that,
which like, I don't know if you remember, but when we did the set visit for Night Before like a year and a half ago,
yeah,
we asked these guys specifically if they were working on something for Neighbors 2 that would be as gross out hilarious as the milking the like over stuffed boob scene, and they were like, we have something we're working on, but they wouldn't tell us anything. And now that we've seen it, I was like, oh my god, and it was great.
I will say though, the milk thing was still more horrifying, and my boobs hurt right now just thinking about it. Like, I finally understand how men feel about watching other men get kicked in the balls. Like, I was like, oh you're right, that's fucking terrible.
But it was, I have to say, it was a special pleasure to hear the men in the theater shriek at the gross out gag in this movie.
Yes. I agree.
And especially then, and then they have a moment about it where like Zac Efron's like, hey, too far. And the girls are like, whatever. And they like call him out on like how that it's actually like, I mean, I know we're getting really into the politics of it because honestly, the progressive nature of the film is part of what makes it stand out so much from the pack of comedies that are coming out right now. But above all else, Neighbors 2 is incredibly funny. Like, I actually think it's funnier than the first film, and I laugh my ass off at the first film.
I like both of them a lot, and I mean, I feel like, obviously, the humor is really similar, so if you didn't find the first one funny, you're not gonna find this one that much funnier. But if you liked the first one, if you thought it was really funny, which I did, then you're gonna, it's a very similar humor. It does come from, like, a slightly different perspective because of the fact that we're dealing with girls this time and younger people and all that stuff, but it is, like, more or less the same kind of humor. But, one more thing I just wanted to say about the kind of progressivism of this movie is that, like, the reason it doesn't feel preachy is because it really just feels like it's a movie about the way that people are actually navigating conversations like this in real life. Because it's something that, like, you know, like, Christy, when you and I talk, these are things that we think about. Like, I think we and a lot of other people kind of think before they say things like, you know, is this a joke I want to tell? Like, how does it sound when I say that? Like, people are very aware of that, but I feel like so many movies and comedies don't really like try to ignore that. So I love that this movie seems to kind of exist in the real world space where people are thinking about stuff like that.
Totally. It considers the context of not just who's telling the joke, but as you said, who they're telling it to, what their relationship is, because all those things matter. I mean, like, that's why it's like, it's dangerous to tweet a potentially offensive joke on Twitter, because people may not take into context who you are as a person or the 19 jokes that led up to that were whatever. But like, in the movie actually allows for the moment to understand these characters enough that these jokes work really smartly and become a dialogue about comedy. So like, I actually thought this was great because with all these comedians coming out and complaining and like, all, you know, the internet entirely always enraged about like, you know, like, oh, well, these people just want to kill comedy. Like, Neighbors 2 is like, clear, we can be funny and not be a bunch of shitheads.
I mean, speaking of tweeting things, I think I went home and I tweeted, like, you know, Neighbors 2 is the counter to all those arguments about, like, when people whine, like, oh, PC ruins comedy. It's just like, no, it fucking doesn't. This is one of the funniest comedies I've seen in years, even leaving aside all the progressive, you know, angles of it. And it's, yeah, and it is still, like, pretty raunchy and, like, not safe for work, but it's not, it's a movie that is very conscious of, you know, trying to keep up with evolving social mores.
Yeah, it's definitely R-rated, proudly R-rated, but I think we should wrap. And, yeah, I mean, this weekend you can't go wrong. Nice Guys is great, Neighbors 2 is great. If I had to pick, I'd go see Neighbors 2 again.
Nice Guys is great. Neighbors 2 is great. Captain America Civil War is still in theaters. It is just like a bounty of riches. I think The Lobster is out now. Like, what even? What a good fucking weekend. Please go to the movies. You're going to have such a good time. Watch any of the things I just named.
that's everything for us. So you can find us on popcornprosecco.com. We're on Twitter at popcornprosecco. We're on Facebook. You can find us on iTunes, where we'd love you for you to subscribe. And please rate and review us. That's super helpful. And you can find us on the internet. Angie, do you want to give your plug?
I do. You can find me on Twitter at AJHAN, and I write for slashfilm.com.
And Perry can be found at PNMROF, and she writes for Collider.com. And I am Christy Puchko. I can be found on Twitter at Christy Puchko. That's KristyPuchko. And I write all over the web. So to find my career highlights, go to DecadentCriminals.com. That's everything for us this week. Bye, everyone.
When you're talking to your doctor, no! You tell him you have a spiral fracture.
No!
Deep breath.
No! Yeah!